Welcome to the Austin Therapy Podcast. I'm Teresa, and I am a social worker by background, and I am joined by
Kate.
And I have a background in psychology. And we're two siblings reading through Northanger Abbey. I've read everything, and Teresa's read Pride and Prejudice from last season. And today we're doing chapter 18, 19, and 20.
Yay!
I do feel like we're getting into some good meat of the book, if that's the right word, right? Like we're towards that last third. We've talked about how everything always happens in books in the third act, which is my biggest pet peeve in reading, but also just necessary. So here we are. I don't think we're quite into the third act, but I think we're nearing it. I will say, so I read this a couple days ago and I'd also had a couple drinks when I read it. So I don't know if any of my notes are going to make sense.
You remember what happened?
I'm sure it'll come back to me.
So we start out in Bath. The Allens are going to miss Catherine. And then she meets up with Isabella in the pump rooms. And yeah, what did you think of their interaction here?
I mean, I dislike Isabella intensely. And I wrote that down many times. I also wrote down quite a few times, my eyes rolled. And Isabella clearly is not in love with James.
Yes.
I think she's in love with the idea of someone like James.
Yeah, because James is very like honorable and steadfast and probably would be a pretty good husband. I think before they got the letter back indicating how little income they would have, and I say little, it's not little, but she had this impression that they probably were better off than they were. I don't know. What did you think of her passing on the fact that John thinks he has an agreement with Catherine?
Well, so I did write down, because before I started reading these chapters, you and I had talked on the phone, and you said that you thought I would hate these chapters. And I wrote down, Kate did say I would hate these chapters. I hate these chapters. Because it's just so gross. It makes my skin want to crawl, just how icky and manipulative and possessive the Thorpes are.
Yeah.
And I appreciate that Catherine's like, I don't know what you're talking about. You're totally trying to gaslight me here. And I don't understand where this is coming from, because your brother has expressed no interest in me and I have expressed no interest back. We danced together once and he was horribly rude and late.
Yeah, stop pretending like there was something going on there that there wasn't. And it's also the fact that Isabella is trying to turn things so that Catherine's the bad guy, and that I don't know if their friendship would have been sustained if there wasn't the attachment with James.
Mm-hmm.
Because Catherine's like, we're going to be sisters. Like, why the fuck are you making a big deal out of something that you know isn't a big deal? And Catherine's like, you know that I did nothing wrong, right? Isabella just basically says, oh, what's a little harmless flirtation? And of course, I read that and I'm like, you're projecting a lot of things right now, Isabella, that you're trying to make men the inconstant ones when you are the one who is flirting with another guy in front of your fiance.
And what we know is there has been no flirtation from Catherine's side also. So she's using this language that is descriptive of her own behavior, but not descriptive of Catherine's. It's another way to undermine Catherine a little bit, to make Catherine seem flighty is the word that comes to mind.
Well, flaky, inconstant. She's trying to paint Catherine as, oh, maybe you didn't have an agreement with my brother, but you definitely encouraged him. And Catherine's like, I literally did not.
I said no to him many times.
Yeah, I do not like your brother. And you know this. And if you don't know this, you haven't been paying attention when I'm around your brother.
Which is also a strong possibility.
Well, I do wonder if John has basically twisted the story of, like, when we were in the carriage together, Catherine and I had such a great conversation, da-da-da, she loves my horses. And, oh yeah, we had such a great dance together, Catherine's so graceful, Oh, it's too bad she went to dance with Tilney, but she reassured me that I could dance with her next time, even though she didn't. And like, if John's just like been creating these stories, because technically Isabella hasn't been around, and Catherine's been trying to be polite, but again, Catherine hasn't done anything to encourage him. If anything, she's been pushed towards him by her friend.
You know what's interesting? So as you're saying that, I had this realization that John Thorpe is what modern day pickup artists are now. And I use that term like very loosely and very like I hate that term because I don't think it's an art and I don't really think they're picking people up. I think it's full-blown just misogyny happening. But that is exactly what he has created in this situation and the way that he tries to engage Catherine.
He's very predatory. And there's this icky feeling of like, thank God the Tilneys are taking her away and she's not gonna run into John again. And also, like, to a certain extent, again, people talking about Catherine not having a backbone. Okay, no, she does. Like, she just tells Isabella, you're making shit up that didn't happen. And I'm like, okay, like naive that Catherine maybe didn't understand that she shouldn't be hanging out with John on her own. But Catherine's behavior in all of these situations has been impeccable. So maybe there's like that, okay, she didn't know what the social protocols were, but Isabella's just lying to her face and she's calling her on it.
Well, yeah, it's this line of Isabella says, circumstances change, opinions alter. Catherine's response to that, which I love, is, but my opinion of your brother never did alter. It was always the same. You are describing what never happened.
Like, yes, Catherine, calling her out for her shit.
And just being very real about, like, I don't know what you're talking about. I'm not going to pretend like I know what you're talking about because that does neither one of us a service.
And I think she also does a good job in here of if your brother said that we had a conversation, we did, and I just don't remember it, but be assured that I have never encouraged him and I have never liked him. She's leaving the room to be like, okay, maybe I misunderstood something, but I'm not the one who made a misunderstanding into an engagement. Do you think back to that scene where he's like, one marriage brings on another, and are you like, what the actual fuck? That Catherine just like Ray rocked him through that whole thing, giving him non-answers, and he still fed into it what he wanted to hear.
Well, and so I think this is an interesting comparison to make because when I think back to Pride and Prejudice and you think about those like early chapters where we don't get Darcy's inner monologue necessarily, but he's clearly reading something that's in this conversation that's not in it for Lizzie. But I think what feels very different about that and what John Thorpe has done is the intention behind it. So Darcy's like, ooh, I'm falling in love with this mean girl who's mean to me and I like it and it's flirty and we're having a nice time. But he keeps that to himself and like processes his internal feelings versus John Thorpe has made this all about him and all about making sure everyone else knows it's all about him and really projecting it outwardly and drawing other people into this narrative.
I mean, my first instinct is to defend Darcy because you've just compared him to John Thorpe.
But it's meant to be that they are very different, not that I am comparing them as the same.
I mean, like when you were like, the difference between Darcy and Thorpe is, I mean, Darcy never tries to kidnap Lizzie and he's very, very shy and doesn't impose himself on her.
Yes, he's not the villain in the story.
When he does propose marriage, he's very clear and then gets rejected, not like making up a weird sort of like we mentioned weddings once in a conversation. By that caliber, like Tilney and Catherine are engaged. But I do kind of, as you were talking, I was like, I wonder if that's how Lizzie saw Darcy, was as a John Thorpe. I don't entirely think she did, but I wonder if they stood side by side, if she would have been like, they're the same guy. These are the same picture.
And I guess what I'm trying to get across is how effectively Jane Austen has written these characters that, yeah, on paper, without really understanding them or kind of having a lot of context to them, you know, if Lizzie was to put them side by side, they might seem like the same person.
I mean, except Darcy's very handsome. Let's just throw it out there that John Thorpe's not,
and makes a lot of money. So like, yeah, okay. There are things that differ them, but they are similar surface archetypes. It's when you go below that, and what Jane Austen does so effectively in understanding their motivations, that's when that difference in that chasm comes. And when it becomes very clear the difference between a Darcy and why you'd fall in love with him versus a Thorpe and why you'd murder him.
Right. I do think that there's like that difference between like when Darcy's like admiring Lizzie's fine eyes and you're like, oh, he's kind of cute. I'm not sure I like him, but I'm not sure I hate him. And then when you realize that John Thorpe likes Catherine, you're like, oh, gross. So you know that Darcy's going to turn from an enemy to a lover, whereas you're praying that John Thorpe doesn't turn from an enemy to a lover.
I'm going to guess some of our listeners will have some thoughts on this, maybe in the comments, and I'm going to leave it all in because I think this will be maybe my downfall in the Jane Austen world that I just compared Darcy and Thorpe. Moving along.
Yeah. What did you think of Isabella basically like looking at the door and Catherine just calling her out and being like, who are you waiting for?
I think, again, it endears me a little bit more towards Catherine. And I think like Catherine projects this naive worldview and this very sheltered worldview. But there are a lot of instances in this chapter in particular, in multiple different ways, she shows how savvy she is and how perceptive she can be. Does she always get it right? No, but she does have this like internal feeling of like, that's a little weird.
I mean, I do actually think if we were to use Catherine as an example of learning to follow your instincts, Catherine's instincts have actually been screaming correct things. She's just not very good at listening to them or even maybe understanding what they're trying to tell her. And these few chapters solidify that Catherine is worried about things. And we'll get to Henry Tilney's perspective on things. But I think I just really appreciate that Catherine is noticing that something's off and calling Isabella on it. But I think this is something that she kind of consistently does, but then just believes Isabella's response. This is the first time where she's recognized that Isabella's response is bullshit.
Yeah, she's got an initial good gut feeling, but she doesn't trust herself enough initially to follow that. She's maybe learning through this book and growing, which is kind of nice.
Kind of nice and also kind of sad. You don't necessarily want your Catherines to come across Isabella's or John Thorpe's. You just wish they could be happy.
But that doesn't make for a good book, especially a gothic parody.
Like we were talking about the other day, if you have regrets, it means you've grown. So Catherine may come to regret her interactions with the Thorpes, but at least they're teaching her lessons.
Mm-hmm. She's learning. She's growing. So I gotta say, another sneaky villain in this. I think Captain Tilney's a villain. I don't like him. He's a dick.
Did you notice that even at the start of this chapter, Catherine reassures her that James is going to come? And just like two paragraphs later, Isabella's talking about Tilney by his last name.
Mm-hmm.
Same intimacy she has with her fiance. And that she's like basically commenting that Tilney says this about me and Tilney says that. And like very clearly these guys have been conversing.
And flirting a lot.
Yeah. And Isabella's got a new crush. There's a little part of me that feels like without all of the systems in place that tell us how relationships are supposed to be, would Isabella be more happy in a non-monogamous structure? And then I realized that no, Isabella is not someone who can sustain relationships, but also wants to be taken care of.
Mm-hmm. She wants the security of a relationship, but none of the actual effort or responsibility or respect that a relationship requires.
Yeah. And you get the feeling of kind of Tilney's come along and he's the bright new shiny thing and he's also interested in me. So like, woo, fancy. And that James is kind of forgotten.
Yeah, she doesn't care.
Yeah, she's moved on, even though she hasn't communicated that to James yet.
And will she? Unclear.
Right?
Yeah, it's a little interesting. Like, there's this line in here that I edited for Jane Austen, which is, it seems to her, Catherine, it seems to her that Captain Tilney was falling in love with Isabella, and Isabella unconsciously encouraged him. And I scratched out the on unconsciously and put Isabella consciously encouraging him.
But this is Catherine's observation.
Yes. And Catherine wants to see the best in people.
Yeah. She doesn't think that Isabella would do this consciously. But again, this is supposed to be that line that drops in that piece of Catherine that's naive. And I think it's so interesting because, like, Catherine's naive to not expect manipulation. And okay, that she sees something is bad here, but she's not assuming anyone is intentionally doing bad things.
Right. She assumes people have the best intentions at heart. And I think that that probably reflects her intentions for things. Right. Catherine wants to function from a place of good intentions.
She's just sincere. What did you think of the weird whispery flirts
between Isabella and Captain Tilney?
Yeah.
There's like one back and forth in here where Isabella says, "My heart indeed, what can you have to do with hearts? You men have none of you any hearts." And Captain Tilney responds with, "If we have not hearts, we have eyes, and they give us torment enough." And like, ew. That line is so fucking creepy. It's so creepy. It's so misogynistic. It's reduced women to their physical features and body.
So it's interesting. Like, it is a creepy line, but I get the sense that she's encouraged it and that she finds it flattering to just be desired in that sort of prospect, like, I'm an object way. She's enjoying being objectified.
Yeah, and she's put value into that in her life.
And I guess I have the perspective of, if that's what Isabella liked, and this were a purely consensual situation, fine. But do you also know that Captain Tilney thinks that way for all women? And then there's a little part of me that's like, Isabella, you're being stupid.
Well, so in this period, in this time period, Isabella's flirtations border on cheating.
Oh, they don't border on cheating. She is.
Yeah, it is wildly inappropriate. And both of them know it. And so, like, I think about that word of if it was consensual, but there is a third party in this also.
Well, yes, that's what I mean. It would have to be structurally so.
And it is not.
No. Because James isn't even here right now. He doesn't know that his fiance has formed another affection.
And I haven't been super pleased with James throughout the book, because I think he's like a bit of a pushover brother, especially when it comes to John Thorpe. Like, he really should have stood up for Catherine a couple more times than he has. So I don't love that about him. I still don't think this is not okay. I don't dislike him so much that I'm like, yes, run away together, Isabella and Captain Tilney. Like, do it. It's fine.
Well, and I guess that's interesting because it draws my brain back to the fact that James had to physically restrain Isabella and block John from chasing after Catherine after John had gone to tell Miss Tilney to cancel Catherine's plans. And one, it reminds me, like, Isabella's such, she's full of such shit to not recognize how much Catherine does not like her brother and what a horrible friend. And two, that the Thorpes also have this perspective of you viewing people as objects. So it would make sense that Isabella likes to be flirted with this way.
Yeah, it's how their family has structured their value in the world and their perception of others and themselves.
And then Catherine leaves Isabella with Captain Tilney, and she just assumes that Captain Tilney must not understand the situation. And she's trying to figure out how she can hint to her friend that her friend is being inappropriate. And then she thinks about John, and she's like, yeah, his affections maybe would feel like a compliment and make up for Isabella, but how could he make that stupid mistake? And that he offered and I encouraged him. What an asshole.
Yeah, because he's horrible.
Yeah, of course, Catherine. He is. He's the worst human ever.
He's the villain. He's the murderer. No one's died yet that we know of.
That you know of.
Unless they're all ghosts.
Right?
We haven't figured that out yet.
That could be what's going on. Yeah, and then Catherine is like watching all of these interactions happen. James is there, and she's noticing that her brother is unhappy.
Reasonably so.
And she's unsure what to do. And so she tries to tell Isabella to back off. She tries to make it possible. She's like, okay, Captain Tilney's gonna leave with us and it's fine. And then she finds out he's not going to Northanger. And so she just runs over to her boyfriend, Henry Tilney, and she's like, what the fuck is wrong with your brother?
Well, she does start off with like, he must not know, right? Right? Like, come on, Henry, tell me he doesn't know. And Henry's like, oh no, he knows.
I told him right away.
And the way it comes off, I just imagine Henry being like, yep, that's my older brother. He's a real dick. We all hate him. He knows. He knows better.
And I think it's really interesting that Catherine is pushing Henry to intervene. And Henry's like, why?
He asks this question, and I think it's my favorite question maybe ever asked in this book. It's, is it my brother's attention to Miss Thorpe or Miss Thorpe's admission of them that gives the pain? And it's so thoughtfully constructed in that you can tell Catherine has not thought of this before. And he's like, let's take a pause here. Let's think about what's making this hard and where this issue actually is arising from. And it can be both. If your desire is to address this, Catherine, you need to understand why it's bothering you so much.
And I think this is, we've talked before about how he doesn't like Isabella and has been very cautious in how he critiques her. And I think in this, he's not excusing his brother at all. He, like you said, he's like, yep, my brother's a dick. I told him that she's engaged. He knows about it.
He doesn't care.
Yeah. And he's like, persuasion is not at command. I can't make him do anything else. And Catherine's trying to make Captain Tilney not the villain, but in the wrong. And I think it's a really interesting analysis of, I mean, we could do like an analysis of power in that Catherine has been told that men are the ones with power. So she's like, he's the one who's exercising power over Isabella. Isabella is unable to make her own choices. Da, 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 da. And Tilney's the one who's like, no, your friend is permitting this to happen right now. And I know that might hurt you, but your friend is making a choice.
Right. Well, and I think that the distinction that feels important for me there is that Captain Tilney does still hold the power in this dynamic and in this world and in this time period because he is a man and he's a captain and all of those things. But it doesn't mean that Isabella can't still be functioning in this society, in this setting, in a way that she's making choices that are hurtful, that are willful. So even though he still maintains power, she's also still engaging in a way that is hurtful and harmful.
As they talked about before, that she has the power to say no. Yes, for the time period, like, and for a lot of time periods, that power gets taken away. But this isn't one of those circumstances. She is publicly flirting with someone in front of her fiance. And there's that aspect also of like, no man is offended by another man's admiration of the woman he loves. It is the woman only who can make it a torment. And I think it's that perception of when someone cheats, you shouldn't be mad with the person that they're cheating with. You should be mad with your partner who broke a consensual agreement with you.
Well, I do think it can be both.
I don't think Henry closes that option from existing. He does admit that his brother is a dick because he knows that she's engaged and is continuing to flirt with her. But I think Catherine is doing that thing where she's like, because she has feelings and affection for Isabella, Isabella can't be the one who's doing something wrong. She must be tempted. And then I think that Henry kind of boils that down too, of like, is it actually love if she has to be isolated for it to be maintained? Is it only that with my brother going away, that your brother will be able to trust her? That's maybe something your brother should think about.
Right. Maybe this isn't quite the perfect match.
And I think it's just really interesting that he's kind of like, male, female, power dynamics aside, he's trying to tell Catherine her friend sucks.
Yep.
But he's doing it in the, like, I'm going to ask you questions to reflect on. I'm not going to tell you what to think.
Yep. And my questions might guide you to an answer.
Your questions might inform you of my opinion.
Right. But I'm not going to outright be like, your friend sucks.
Yeah. And then he's like, okay, but like, they're just flirting. You know, if you trust your friend, it's not actually going to go any further than that. And maybe your brother trusts her too, and that this is okay. And I just love that he tries to reassure her. I will not say do not be uneasy, because I know that you are so at this moment. But be as little uneasy as you can. And I'm just like, you're so validating. I just want to squish you.
It feels like a good therapy line. No therapist should ever tell you, hey, don't feel that way, because that doesn't do shit. But he's acknowledging and validating, and also saying, like, this also doesn't have to consume you.
Yeah. And in a lot of ways, it's not your problem. You need to let your brother and your friend be grown-ups.
And sometimes being grown-up sucks.
Well, and not even that. Just like, yeah, there may be sucky consequences for your brother, and that sucks. But stop acting like you have control over the situation. You don't. And your brother might be walking into a mistake and he might get hurt. But fundamentally, in this circumstance, your brother's going to be okay.
If they don't get married, your brother will find someone else. It's going to be okay.
If they don't get married, I will be quite happy, because I don't want my sister-in-law to be a Thorpe.
You should not want your sister-in-law to be a Thorpe. Really what he's trying to say also.
And he does reassure her. Henry Tilney must know best. And so Catherine feels better. And I think this is one of those situations where it's just like a partner just reassuring their upset partner. I love that at the beginning of this, he tries to avoid this conversation altogether. She asks him a question and he answers it. And then she asks another question and she's like, he doesn't answer. And he's like, I'm in a tuck over here. And she's like, no, you don't. Tell me what's going on. And he's like, okay. And I don't know, this conversation here and this back and forth, I just love, where is the line? He says, you are a close questioner. And she says, am I? Well, answer my questions. Like, he's also drawing for her, like, I don't know what my brother is thinking. I can make guesses, but it's guesswork. And Catherine's like, okay, then guess. Tell me what your thoughts are. And I just, I don't know. This felt like such a high school boyfriend and girlfriend conversation.
Mm.
She's like, what's going on with your brother? And he's just like, oh, hi, Jason. No, you tell me now.
It's nice, because a lot of the time when I have read past Catherine Henry scenarios, it does feel like Henry is a little bit in the upper hand.
Like he's imparting information.
Yeah, or he's in control of the conversation, versus this is a shift where Catherine's like, no, I want information. I want an answer. We're going to talk about this.
Yeah, and he's like, okay, we're talking about this. I don't like your friend.
Yeah, like, and he goes with it. He doesn't push back against it. He's like, okay, well, I guess this is what we're doing now.
I think this also is a demonstration of Catherine's increased comfort and intimacy with him. He's going to go and talk to someone else, and she's like, no, answer my question. And I think that she is feeling more confident in just capturing his attention and just being like, no, no, we're talking now. It's a very cute interaction, and I kind of love it.
And then we start to make our journey to Northanger.
Yeah, the Allens are sad. Catherine is leaving.
This line felt really cute to me of her happiness in going with Miss Tilney, however, prevented their wishing it otherwise. And it's just like very sweet that they're like, we're sad you're going, but you seem so happy and we're happy for you. So that's really lovely.
How does it feel to you that the Allens, who are her guardians, are sending her away with a family that they've known for what? It's like 5 weeks now?
Yeah, I guess so.
How would you feel if at 17 you made a friend over the summer and you got invited back to their house? The people who you were staying with, who were surrogates for mom and dad, were just like, sure.
I think this is where our upbringings differ
Yeah.
because I'd probably be fine with it. And I think what you're hinting towards is like, this is weird.
It is. It feels so weird to me to go and stay at someone else's house that you just kind of met.
Well, and I think this is what maybe where things differ is I did a lot of sleepaway summer camps and things like that. Not a ton, but I did some where you do form fast relationships and friendships with people. That doesn't feel super abnormal.
To then go home after the sleepaway camp and stay at their house for a month.
I mean, a month might be excessive, but in this time period, a month is not that long considering how far everything is and how hard it is to get places. Like you don't go for an overnight.
I guess not if it's what, 30 kilometers or is it miles away?
I think this is where things differ for us. And is it a little weird? Yes. And I think it feels more weird because it's the Allens versus Catherine's parents.
Right.
But also, like, Catherine's 17. It's not like she's like six and they're sending her off.
No, but she's 17 and not actually out. She knows no social rules and etiquette. She's extremely vulnerable.
Do you think the Moreland family values that?
I don't think the Moreland family understands it.
Exactly. So, like, I don't think even the Morelands would worry about it.
But the Allens are making this decision. And the Allens know this.
Do they?
I mean, Mr. Allen has shown some smarts around these things. He's just not been attentive.
Exactly. So, like, he's unattentive and Mrs. Allen doesn't care. Like, it's like maybe a little weird, but it's not like I get it. Your questioning of this, though, does make me think that there's something evil at Northanger, and it might be the Tilney family. What I'm holding out hope for is that because I know Henry is your favorite hero, is that he's not going to murder Catherine.
Maybe I like a dark hero. Maybe he turns her into a vampire.
Okay, but I know you well enough to know you don't like a dark hero like that.
So, like, I guess I just really resonate with Catherine being like, Mr. Allen takes her for breakfast, and she's like, oh my God, 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 I need to go home. I need to go home. I'm not doing this. I'm not doing this. I'm not doing this. And she's like ready to leave with Mr. Allen until Henry comes in and smiles, and she's like, okay, he's cute. I can do this. I can do this.
I get that part of it, the anxiety of it. That makes so much sense to me. I've been there all the time.
The reason that I will never get a Henry Tilney of any variety is because the anxiety would conquer me. I mean, and maybe to be fair, Henry has demonstrated a decently good job of being able to handle anxiety. He calms Catherine down. And Catherine, when she starts thinking about bad things, remembers what Henry Tilney told her. Did you notice that over the chapter, he changed from Henry Tilney to Henry?
As we're getting more intimate.
I think that I would just be conquered too much by my anxiety to end up in any of these situations. Oh, you want me to come stay at your house? Oh, I'll get back to you and then never see Miss Tilney ever again. I would just ghost her.
Yeah, you would.
So yeah, those are my feelings. How did you feel about the Tilney's interactions before leaving?
I don't know. I did write down that I think Catherine's too trusting of General Tilney. Like she defers to him quite a bit, and that makes me a little bit nervous. And yeah, I mean, the Tilney family as a family is weird. Individually, I think I like Miss Tilney and I like Henry, but as a unit, they're a little weird. I don't know. What do you think?
I know what to think.
Oh, fine.
I appreciate that you're noticing that something's off. What did you think of Catherine noticing the general's outward disapproval of his older son?
I mean, I agree with him. We don't like Captain Tilney. It is a weird thing to share openly, though.
In front of this person that you met not that long ago.
Right, who's gonna come stay at your house to be like, my son's a dick.
Well, to just berate him in front of her because he got out of bed late.
Yeah, it feels like a very, like, the family feels very rigid.
I guess there's like a feel of like when they're all together, they're all kind of on eggshells for something. Who do you think the source of it is? Do you think it's Captain Tilney, General Tilney? Is it secretly Henry or Miss Tilney?
I mean, my thought is that it's General Tilney, and some of that is like, if I'm being a bad psychoanalyst, blame it on the parents always.
So, if we considered each one of our podcasts as sessions, I would remember the session where it was mentioned before Captain Tilney came that Catherine observed that Henry and Miss Tilney were super quiet around their dad and he was being super kind to Catherine.
We also know that Jane Austen doesn't necessarily think super highly of parents. Like, there's not a ton of, I guess I only have Pride and Prejudice to reference to, but there's not a ton of like very present, really great parents in her writing. They're either absentee or kind of bad or dead or like weird aunts who you really hate.
I actually think it's interesting in comparison wise to Pride and Prejudice. I think part of the thing that makes Darcy able to marry Lizzie is the fact that his parents are dead and have been dead for a while, that he has autonomy to make choices. And even his aunt imposing, he's like, fuck you, I'm a grown up. Whereas that rigidity and that weirdness that you feel around the family is that Henry Tilney and Miss Tilney are not their own individuals while their father is alive. He is in charge of the family, of their lives. They have to keep him happy with their behavior.
Right, which is why I think about the way in which they've each responded to things. It feels like Miss Tilney and Henry have taken a similar approach of like, we're just going to be very quiet and small when our father's around, versus Captain Tilney feels a little more defiant and a little more rebellious, and how both of those responses feel very maladaptive, but yet still coping mechanisms for dealing with an abusive parent.
I like that you point out to that because where my brain was going next was that Captain Tilney just listens to his father in silence, presumably while everybody's watching at breakfast, and that Catherine can't hear anything except that he mutters to Eleanor, "How glad I shall be when you are all off." And I think it's interesting that you get this closeness between Eleanor and Henry. And you get this sense that they love their brother, but they don't like their brother, and that the feeling is mutual. He doesn't like them either. And I do wonder if there's a piece like he loves them, but he doesn't love them, like them. And I guess I feel this piece of like him possibly being the older child, receiving the brunt of things and having two siblings who were quiet, who did what dad wanted.
Yeah, and not feeling like he had an ally in it.
Yeah, I hear Henry talk about his brother like very much with this openness and understanding that his brother's not perfect and he doesn't like his decisions. But I also hear the affection of brotherhood in the way that he talks about his brother. Just interesting family dynamics.
Yep, something to keep an eye on. Might be interesting when Catherine's locked in the Abbey with them and all of the dead bodies and ghosts.
Yes. And they pack up to go, and Catherine gets squished in with Miss Tilney and her maid to the point that they were going to throw out her new writing desk to make room. And Catherine's like, I just bought that.
Please don't throw that away.
And I think it's just an interesting piece of like, why is General Tilney packing this way? and like the sense of economy about it. Just very interesting. And he's done so much work to impress Catherine. This is not a moment where Catherine feels very impressed.
No. And it does make me wonder about like what's their financial situation. Because I guess what I had pictured is that the Tilney family is fairly well off. But then this feels like a weird place to be frugal. Cool. All of you can fit in this tiny carriage together with all of your things. We'll just stack it on top of you. You don't need to breathe. It just feels very strange.
Yeah. And that Catherine even says in here that General Tilney's presence made the 2 hours feel like four.
So she started to notice it herself.
Yeah. Like he's just got this oppressive presence. But then he's like, hey, why don't you ride with Henry?
And she's like, okay, that sounds much nicer.
Well, she's like, I guess I can defer to his judgment. He wouldn't put me in a bad situation, which I think is something to like keep in mind, that General Tilney is encouraging the attachment between Henry and Catherine, that he's wanting that connection.
Maybe he thinks she has a huge dowry. I don't know why everyone thinks that the Morelands are very rich, but that seems to be the misconception.
Right? What did you think of Henry's driving?
I mean, it's better than John Thorpe's.
Henry drove so well, so quietly, without making any disturbances, without parading to her or swearing at them, the horses. So different from the only other gentleman coachman whom it was in her power to compare with. And he sat so well, and the innumerable capes of his gray coat looked so becomingly important. To be driven by him next to being dancing with him was certainly the greatest happiness in the world. It's like, you know what? Someone who can make you feel safe while they're driving, whether it's in a car or with some horses. Yeah, that's a feeling I'm happy with.
It's very romance book-esque. This is the type of writing you expect for like how to say someone's fallen head over heels without saying they've fallen head over heels.
Yeah, she is just so happy to be here with him. And she's just like, I will listen to you now.
Mm-hmm.
And he talks about how his sister is lonely.
Which is sad.
And he's happy that she's coming to stay with his sister. Which I think is also like, oh, Henry, we know why she's coming.
Right. She's not actually coming to hang out with your sister. It's nice that her and your sister are friends. But she's here to romance you. Or be romanced by you. I don't know which way.
I don't think Catherine does either. Catherine doesn't know. And then Catherine's surprised that he doesn't live at Northanger, which I think is fascinating that they've gone through all of this and she hasn't been like, so where are you from?
Right?
Like she has this sense of intimacy with him and she really, really likes him, but she hasn't asked those other questions of like, so what do you do for a living? What's the day in the life of Henry Tilney? She's kind of made up an idea of what he is.
It makes me think back to like when she found out that they lived at an abbey, something she probably should have known fairly early on. She only found out after they invited her to come stay.
Yeah, I love Catherine. And I love that Catherine stands up for things and has these huge values. But like, Catherine doesn't always have a lot of depth. What? You don't live at Northanger? Honey, we've been dating for a month.
It's not like he lives in the house, like, down the road. He lives 20 miles away.
Yeah, he's in another town. And I love that she's just like, oh, I'm sorry you don't live at the Abbey. And he's like, oh, why? I mean, I love that she says, how sorry you must be for that. And he says, I'm always sorry to leave Eleanor.
Yeah, it's sweet.
I love you. You're such a good brother.
It's nice that they're close.
Right? He really cares for her. I mean, we see the split in terms of dynamics and Henry as the middle child kind of having that deferring relationship with his older brother and his younger sister. He's the carer. Middle children all the way. Whoop, whoop. And then he just kind of smiles that she's got these fanciful ideas about the Abbey. And she's like, it's one of those places that you read about. And he's like, oh, are you prepared to counter all of its horrors?
Which I'm just picturing that, like, the Abbey is going to be really bad.
You think it's going to be in a shambles?
Yeah.
I mean, we see it at the end.
Yes, but I think it's going to get worse.
Okay, like there's like wings of the abbey that aren't complete and full of mystery and ghosts.
No, I mean like dirty and like not well taken care of.
What do you think of this entire interaction and Henry Tilney's flirting style?
I mean, I guess what I'll say is I wrote flirty question mark. Like I wasn't really sure if he was flirting or not. So like it doesn't do it for me. I don't know. Did it do it for you?
I think it starts as teasing.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, no, I don't need to worry. It's not like it's been uninhabited for years or that there's been people who've been murdered there or like it's an asylum or anything like that. And he's like, no, certainly. And then goes into this story of telling her about what is going to happen when you arrive, what mystery awaits you. And Catherine's just like, that will not happen to me, I am sure. And he's like, oh, how fearfully you examine the furniture of your apartment. And just kind of like, I just imagine him putting on like a voice as he's doing this. And it's teasing and also a callback to the fact that he knows a good gothic novel. He knows what Catherine reads.
Right, he knows what she likes.
He's like, oh, you like gothic novels, baby? Let me do some foreplay and tell you a story about how you're gonna get scared. And then Catherine just goes through it, the whole thing. Oh, Mr. Tilney, how frightful! This is just like in a book, but it cannot really happen to me. I am sure your housekeeper is not Dorothy. Well, what then? She's just so excited, like, oh, tell me more. So I don't know if it starts as flirting, but then when Catherine gets excited and encourages it, I just imagine him being like even more into the story that he's telling.
They flirt in very unconventional ways.
They started like two goths flirting. She was like, oh, you must be sad to not live at the Abbey because it must be horrifying. And he monologues a story for her. If that is not what dating looks like, I don't want to be doing it.
All right, we're putting that into the world.
I just want someone where I will be like, oh, it's really stormy out. I have to go to the grocery store. It will be a dark and stormy night. And just breaks into monologuing a whole story about my adventure to 7-Eleven. Okay? That's what I need in my life. And I feel like Henry Tilney would do that.
We'll put that on your dating profile.
What are my kinks? Henry Tilney. And I just think he's building this up. He's got like, oh, you're gonna find these mysterious letters, and you're not going to be able to read them. It's gonna be, oh, thou, whomsoever thou may be, into whose hand these memoirs of the wretched Matilda may fall, when your lamp suddenly expires in a socket and leaves you in total darkness. And Catherine's like, oh, no, do not say so. Well, go on. And he just can't. He literally can't get back to having control. He just laughs.
Well, and it makes me think about the moments in a relationship where like they're both so into it, and then one of them just has this like moment of getting pulled out for whatever reason, and it's like, oh fuck, this is funny, and just like bursts out laughing, and how much that will endear people to each other. It is really sweet, and really, I really enjoyed that as a literary device also, of perhaps there's maybe some foreshadowing in this also. So to have him tell the story of like what could potentially happen, knowing that it's a gothic parody, has Jane Austen just tipped her hand entirely and given us the rest of the story as a funny literary device and done it in a fun, kind of playful way with Tilney. I don't know, but I wonder. So we're looking out for Dorothy and Matilda.
Dorothy and Matilda and some secret letters.
I could also see, though, Tilney being like, you know, it's going to be really fucking funny. I'm going to write these fake letters for Matilda and put them in her room, and it'll be hilarious.
These two are going to role play so much. And how could you not role play with someone who has that talent to just be like, let me tell you a story? They are adorable and I love them. And I love that after all of this, Catherine's like trying to save face And she's like, that would never happen. Miss Tilney would never put me in a room like that. I'm fine. Says that she grew ashamed of her eagerness. And I think she like lands on the wrong thing to be ashamed of. That he's laughing because I think he's like, wow, this girl really likes me. She's listening to me tell a really stupid story and she's super interested and into it. And Kevin's like feels ashamed that maybe he might think she were actually scared by his scary story.
Right. She's like, that really wasn't that scary. I hope you know that.
And it's just so cute.
They are very cute together.
They get each other too, I feel like. They have this like pitter patter to the way that they talk to each other. Like this conversation and the conversation before where, okay, Catherine might not know that he doesn't live at Northanger. Because she doesn't bother to ask him any questions. But fundamentally, it seems like they trust and understand each other.
Well, and they seem to talk about things that feel important to both of them. Where he lives, I guess not that important, right? And they do eventually get around to it, but they've built their foundation on mutual interest versus read me your CV.
Right. And I think it's really interesting that pretty much at this point, Catherine doesn't know what his situation is.
Mm-hmm.
Isabella's like, money, money, money. And Catherine's like, I like Henry's personality.
And knowing that, like, he's the second son, too. It's also not going to be the really wealthy one.
The main inheritor. I like that her attention is for some time suspended by his conversation on subjects very different. Returned in full force, and every bend in the road was expected with solemn awe to afford a glimpse of its massy walls and of graystone. And Catherine's just like really excited to see this abbey. She's like, oh, Henry, the abbey. It could be around any corner now.
We're so close. But she's kind of disappointed. It's a little too modern. It's not what she pictured it being.
She wanted a ruin. She wanted an old, decrepit, gothic castle.
She wanted what she has pictured in the books.
Mm-hmm.
But it's kind of just like modern and average.
What did you think of General Tilney talking down his house? The general, perceiving how her eye was employed, began to talk of the smallness of the room and the simplicity of the furniture, where everything, being for daily use, pretended only to comfort, etc. Flattering himself, however, that there were some apartments in the abbey not worthy of her notice, and was proceeding to mention the costly gilding of one in particular, when taking out his watch, he stopped short to pronounce it with surprise within 20 minutes of 5. So, like, there's a lot that happens there.
Mm-hmm.
But Catherine's wide-eyed at the abbey, and that her expectation is kind of what yours were, of a decrepit place with cobwebs and dirt, and it's like, nope, this is a nice clean house. But he goes and then talks down this magnificent place.
It's interesting though, because he talks it down, but then he's also like, here's all these really great things. Oh, here's the time, we gotta go. And it feels almost insecure.
I think that's a decently good way to describe General Tilney. There's some essence of insecurity there. What did you think of this? Oh, it's almost dinner time, everybody go.
Yeah, it's weird. There seems to be maybe some rules in this house that Catherine's going to have to learn to navigate.
Yes, which, like, I'm sure she's probably not used to. The way that her upbringing kind of sounded, it was not that there were no rules in her house, but remembering how Catherine's was brought up, like, she got to go play outside and play with her siblings and just be around. And this is like, oh, supper's in 20 minutes, even though we just drove for 4 hours or longer. Let's go.
Yep. It's supper time. We eat dinner at this time.
Yeah. There's some rigidity to the Tilney household.
It does make me wonder what's going to happen when Catherine sleeps in one day or she's 5 minutes late to dinner.
Right.
What's that going to look like? Because I'm sure it's going to happen.
Okay.
So I guess we can start off with predictions from there.
Yeah.
I predict Catherine's going to break one of these unwritten rules and it's going to end poorly. I suspect we're not done with the Thorpes.
Okay.
And I have this like image of John Thorpe showing up at the door being like, I am here, and just being there and being annoying.
You said that John Thorpe was going to kidnap Catherine. Do you still think he's going to come and kidnap Catherine?
Maybe. Yeah, you might try.
Okay. Right. And then there's going to be a sword fight with Henry.
Yeah, and then I don't know. Someone's a ghost. There's got to be a murder and a ghost just waiting for it. Maybe someone's a werewolf. Happens on a full moon.
Okay. So someone has to die and there's a ghost. Okay. Did you have a favorite part in these three chapters?
A favorite part? I actually really like how Catherine handles Isabella in the first chapter around the John Thorpe, my brother is so in love with you stuff, and Catherine being like, what are you talking about? No, this is not the conversation we're having. So I really liked Catherine in those moments. So I think that that's probably my favorite part. Do you have a favorite part?
I mean, I like every interaction between Henry and Catherine. I love the flirting and the Henry telling her a story and Catherine being super into it. But I particularly love the sort of like Catherine pressing him for his opinion and perspective on what's going on with Captain Tilney and Isabella, and how well he navigates that while also reassuring her of this isn't something you can control. These are all grown-ups in this situation. I'm not going to tell you not to be anxious about it, but I'm going to tell you that it's probably going to be okay. And that he does that without ever saying that he likes Isabella or he thinks Isabella's not in the wrong or that his brother's a good guy. He does a really good job navigating that, and I just love him for it.
Yeah, that line where he tells her, I know you're uneasy, just try and be as least uneasy as you can be, is definitely one of my favorite lines. I won't use it as my favorite quote because I think it might be yours. So I will use one from my favorite section, which is, but my opinion of your brother never did alter. It was always the same. You are describing what never happened. It just feels so powerful hearing that from Catherine and her being like, you can't gaslight me on this. This is not reality. And I just really enjoy that.
So I do like his, I will not say do not be uneasy because I know you are so at the moment, but be as little uneasy as you can. That is a great, like, little secure attached, how do you reassure an anxious partner moment. And like, he's perfection. But I do also really love the no man is offended by another man's admiration of the woman he loves. It is the woman only who can make it a torment. That really iterates the fact that jealousy shouldn't be possessive. Jealousy is about how your partner is acting towards others, not about how others are acting towards your partner. And even though there's that aspect of like, mom, men are admiring my partner, I think what I hear in that is a piece of, okay, yeah, I love my partner too. Like, of course you're going to admire her, but how she responds to that is what is important in this situation.
Again, yeah, it feels very secure attachment.
Yeah, if you're going to love someone, you have to trust them. I love Henry Tilney.
Yes, we know he's your favorite.
We still haven't reached the moment where Henry Tilney becomes my favorite Jane Austen love interest. But I am still surprised that you compared Darcy to John Thorpe.
Okay, yes, I know. I get it. You're never gonna let me live it down. I get it. It's fine.
I'll forget about it next time we record.
What chapters are we reading next, Kate?
We're reading 21, 22, and 23.
And for those of you following along with us, we really appreciate it. We are still interspersing some Pride and Prejudice content in there, so keep an eye out for that if that comes back up in the next little bit. And yeah, you can find us on Instagram at Austin Therapy Podcast and at Austin Therapy is Kate's meme account.
We are enjoying this and excited to keep going. Do you feel like these chapters like put you in a space of like, I want to see what happens next?
Yes, I still am hoping it continues to pick up, right? Like we're in that starting to ramp up phase, I feel like, and I'm just waiting for it to take off.
Well, we are away from the Thorpes and we've got some great Tilney access. So I'm excited to keep going. We thank you for coming along and we will see you next time.
Bye.
Bye.